Well, we were going to podcast on Thursday. Instead, we got pushed back to this Friday morning. But, fellas, that's a good thing because four major things have happened since.
Four?
Yeah, four since we would have podcasted yesterday. Are you ready for me to name them? Here we go. Ready?
Yes. Yep.
All right, number one, Heath Cummings is back on the show. First time in a long time. Heath, you are the first major thing that we need to talk about. Welcome back.
Headline. I don't know. I mean, I appreciate being on a list. I'm not sure I deserve to be number one.
No, this is ascending order or descending order. I don't know. You're really number
four. Oh, I'm the least important.
Of these, you're not the least important on the show, but of the four things, you are.
Okay. He's going David Letterman.
Well,
top 10.
So. I'm so happy to be here. I've missed your voice. And this is going to be special.
I'm glad you're here. And we're going to talk about busts today, including Zach Greinke, who Heath really wants to talk about. All right, number two. We get new lineup settings in the fantasy baseball leagues. That's great. Now you can now lock the lineups 5 minutes before the first pitch of your player's game, rather than first pitch of the first game of the week. That
now
is
this
pretty
is a
sweet.
Commissioner setting, correct?
This is a commissioner setting that I saw this morning. So that's
so to
awesome.
Be clear, that's like fantasy football style lineup locks where,
right.
You know, if there's a 1 p.m. game on a Monday or on Patriots Day, an 11 a.m. game, you don't have to have your whole lineup locked. You just need to have your Red Sox and whoever they're playing locked. And then when the 7 p.m. games start, you can still rearrange those players up to that point.
And that's awesome.
The best thing about this change or any change is that there's no reason to not like it. Because if you don't like it, just don't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But the more opportunities we can give people for customization, the better.
I agree. Now, a third major thing. Rockies traded Corey Dickerson to Tampa Bay for Jake McGee. Oh, my goodness. So yeah, what could possibly...
bigger than that? Because that's huge.
I know, right? What could
that's
be bigger than that?
That's a shockwave through the fantasy universe.
Well, have you checked
not
Facebook?
Not like this other thing.
Yeah, have you checked Facebook this morning?
No.
I am engaged.
Oh, Adam.
What?
Oh, now I've had two people tell me I need to congratulate you, and I didn't know what for. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, you know, I didn't win an award or anything like that. I just got engaged.
That is huge.
Yeah, I'm very excited
about
it.
That is bigger than Corey Dickerson.
Is it bigger than Heath's return to the podcast?
No.
Yeah, not really.
Now, I have to ask you, Adam. So how long were you two dating?
We met like I would say 2 years.
2 years? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a pretty long time. Because I remember I got engaged with my wife after 7 months of dating.
Oh, wow.
I believe your reaction at the time was, 7 months? And that stuck with me this whole time. So that was a fast 2 years from my perspective, but I guess 2 years is a pretty... healthy amount of time.
Well, once you two start dating, Scott started checking days off on his wall calendar.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've only been living together for a year, like, because we were long distance for a year, so
yeah,
it probably would have been less than 2 years if that hadn't been the case. But anyway, that's awesome. I'm pumped. And the problem was, like, I didn't get anything done yesterday because I had to plan it, and then we went out to dinner, and then when we got home, and I proposed, like. I was calling and texting everybody. So I woke up this morning and I said, please don't let there be any big news in baseball because I don't have time for this right now. And then Corey Dickerson got traded and Doug Fister and Steve Pierce were signed. So we'll get to the news and then we'll talk about busts. So email us at fantasybaseball.
You know what? Those ladies groping the picture of you are going to be very disappointed, Adam.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Do they know yet? Let them down easy. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Scott, you had a pretty interesting take on the Corey Dickerson news on our website on fantasynews.cbsports.com. So why don't you offer it right now and tell us what you're doing with him in the rankings?
Well, I think you have to lower Corey Dickerson in the rankings. Anytime a hitter leaves Coors Field, that's obviously bad news for him. But I think there's going to be this prevailing response to the news that, okay, let's look at Corey Dickerson's home away splits since, you know, obviously away for him is something of an indication of how he performs anywhere other than Coors Field.
Right.
And away from Coors Field in his career, he's hit 249 with a 695 OPS. Pretty dreadful numbers, right?
Yeah, not good.
I've spent some time comparing other Rockies hitters who left Coors Field, and some of the what their splits looked like at the time and then what they ended up becoming. And as you might expect, it's not like you can just take a Rockies hitter away splits and use that as your projection for a player going forward, going to a new park, because there's so much more that goes into home away splits than that. And there seems to be this effect on Rockies hitters where it's almost like hitting at home is so easy for them that hitting on the road becomes that much more difficult.
Well, I think that, I mean, they don't see the same quality of breaking balls at home as they see on the road. And I think they probably get lulled into that and kind of, and I don't think they forget how to hit breaking balls.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably a part of it.
Yeah, that may very well be. And you compare, like, Matt Holliday's numbers, his first year and a half with the Rockies, he did level off the longer he played there, but his first year and a half, and I use that because that's basically what Dickerson's had in the majors so far. His splits home away were just as extreme as Dickerson's were, and obviously he's gone on to be a very good player for the Cardinals. Dexter Fowler, more recently, he wasn't even as high-end as Holliday or Dickerson. He had splits just as bad as Dickerson's during his time at Coors Field, and his fantasy value's only gone up since leaving Colorado. So I think if people overreact to this and bury Dickerson in their rankings, this ends up becoming a net gain for fantasy owners who believe in Dickerson, because it's going to make him that much more affordable on draft day. I dropped him, I think, about four spots in my outfielder rankings, which is more significant than it sounds, because it's in that range where there is the big drop-off in outfield talent. So it's like a $5 drop-off in auction value. He goes from 18 to 13 for me. But I still think he could potentially be a value if the reaction is even stronger negative.
I had the same response, too. I was trying to figure out, because I anticipated dropping him more than I did. I dropped him six spots in head-to-head, seven in Roto. But yeah, after the top, 24, 25, it feels just not that good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so like we talked about Jacoby Ellsbury, I think, the other day, Jason Hayward. You guys have those two, and Heath, you can get in on this too, ranked ahead of Corey Dickerson at this point, and was that the case when he was on Colorado?
We all three now have Hayward and Ellsbury ahead of Dickerson, but I think I had Hayward and Dickerson basically in the same spot before this happened. And I don't think, like, I really think by the time we get around to drafting that nobody's going to be expecting Corey Dickerson to hit 249 with a 695 OPS probably.
Right.
But he is going to be downgraded significantly. And I do think there's, that there's this tier that he was right at the bottom of, as Scott talked about, of the really good outfielders. And now he's fallen into this kind of mess. I think you could rank him anywhere from 28, probably down to 36, 37. And you might feel the same way that the guy that ranked at either end is. Like, there's another tier there.
Well, let me ask you this, and Al, going into last year, I think you had Dickerson in your top 10 in Roto, right? Going into 2015?
Yeah.
So what has changed? Because he still put up pretty good numbers when he was healthy. He dealt with the plantar fasciitis and missed a lot of time last year. But what changed? Like, if I had asked you this on yesterday or Wednesday when he was still on the Rockies, what changed in your evaluation of Dickerson from 2015 to 2016?
The health risk for him, the plantar fasciitis. Plantar fasciitis is just something that we've seen linger for years. Pujols being probably the most prominent example of that, but. Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Well, we have a Roto mock draft later today, so I will ask you, when do you think Corey Dickerson should be drafted? It's a 12-team, five-outfielder league. What round should we be looking to draft Corey Dickerson?
I'm thinking like 8 or 9, maybe more like 9.
And I was going to – my first thought without really looking at it was going to be 10, so – yeah, okay. And I'm just slightly below you on him, so that probably makes sense.
Yeah, I have dropped to 92nd overall, so Eighth. I guess that's eighth round, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is a five outfielder league we're talking about. If it was a three outfielder league, it might be more like 12 or 13. I think, and this kind of gets to what Heath was saying, where you could rank him in this range. I think fair comparisons for Dickerson now are like the two Cardinals outfielders with upside, Randall Grichuk and Stephen Piscotty, who we've seen for a short spurt that they can be very valuable hitters in fantasy, but there's a lot of questions because it's such a small sample. And the questions are reopened here with Dickerson. We thought he was established at a certain level, but now we think he can probably reach a certain level, but it's not as clear now that he's going from far and away the best hitter's park to a pitcher's park.
Is Jake McGee the closer for the Rockies, Heath?
Oh, I think he probably is. I can't imagine. I mean, in the first place, I don't know why the Rockies would make this deal even with Jake McGee as the closer. Even if Jake McGee was the best closer in baseball, you've got a bad baseball team. The closer is one of the least valuable positions to try to make yourself better at. But that being said, yeah, I think he's pretty assuredly the closer as long as he's healthy and doesn't blow up.
Okay.
For what it's worth.
He's great. He's a great pitcher, guys.
He may be the best closer in baseball. I'm betting against it, but he's part of that discussion. One of those maybe 12 or so ace level relievers in the majors who, I mean, you look at his ERA, walk rate, strikeout rate the last 3 years, no reliever with 100 innings tops him in those three. So he deserves to close. Because there's some uncertainty, I don't have him in my top 12, but it would be a close call for me between him and David Robertson, let's say, if we knew for sure McGee was closing, because I think he's that good, even for a team that, you know, doesn't historically provide his closer with a lot of safe chances because they play in high scoring games.
What about the Colorado factor? Al, you scared?
No, not much. I think probably he comes to Colorado with a similar skill set to what Houston Street had his mm-hmm. first season there. And he had an ERA, I think, that was just over 3. So that, you know, that's going to hurt his value a little bit, because I don't see McGee escaping an ERA that I don't expect him to have an ERA even in the mid 2s. But I think otherwise he's going to be fine. He's going to strike guys out. He's not going to walk batters. His whip should still be very good. And yeah, I agree with Scott. I think that if all goes well, he stays healthy, that he's probably a lock to be a top 12 reliever.
And you guys don't concern yourselves too much with how good a team is that a player's, the closer's on, right?
Well, I just said with the Rockies, well, maybe not so much how good a team is, like how many games I project them to win. That factors in some. I mean, a 100-win team versus a 60-win team. It's hard to get many safe chances.
I think the Rockies are probably one of the worst teams in baseball this year, right?
But you can argue that they'll play close games.
Well, I mean, I was just making the opposite argument, that they won't play close games.
With their rotation?
But they score a lot of runs. I mean, yeah. This is every year. They're near the top in runs scored and near the bottom, or if you want to look at a top, it runs allowed. And I put very little stock in that. And I learned that lesson a long time ago with Trevor Hoffman, when he was closing for a lot of bad Padres teams. And
right.
He was still, you know, awesome every single year.
But those Padres teams weren't high scoring teams. I think the lower your team keeps the score, the better chance it's going to be a close game. Because
I think
they may finish. They may be close in terms of runs scored and runs allowed, but it's a high number of both. But that probably means a lot of 11-4 games on both ends of the spectrum. You know, if you're winning a lot of 4-1 games, it's, you know, obviously that's going to mean more save chances.
Okay, well, guys, listen, I want to get to the 2015 early bust list before we run out of time and see if we can fit in some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I'm kind of worried though that, like, we're doing the busts, like the disappointments, like after I got engaged. Is that a bad omen? Should I have like done breakouts today or something, or am I overthinking it?
Yeah, well, you're overthinking it, and you're providing some dramatic contrast.
Okay. Way. All right. That's good. So I'm going to read the rest of the news, and if there's anything that really strikes you, let me know. Steve Pierce, 1 year deal to the Rays. Doug Fister, 1 year deal to the Houston Astros. Yasiel Puig is losing weight, which could be really helpful for him, since, you know, he gets those muscle injuries and he's gigantic for an outfielder. Devin Mesoraco, 100% he will be ready for spring training, recovering from hip surgery. Bronson Arroyo signed a minor league deal with Washington, and I think that's just about it. Is there anything major that we need to talk about?
Did you say Doug Fister?
I did, yeah.
Okay, well, I wasn't listening.
Get off the show, Heath!
Didn't you miss that?
Well, we had a lot of debate, you know, I think just kind of getting ourselves warmed up for the Dickerson deal yesterday. But we had a lot of debate in the office about what was going to happen with the Astros rotation and whether or not Fister could actually go to the bullpen. But there was a report out of the Houston Chronicle yesterday that probably settled all that by saying that Fister was going to slot in. Well, now I forget exactly. Was it? He's got a spot. Maybe it was fourth. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of a speculative thing. But, you know, I trust the beat writer for the Houston Chronicle to speculate more than us about the Astros.
Me too. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I was just going to add that, you know, if Fister is basically a lock for the rotation, he's a relief pitcher eligible pitcher. So a SPARP.
Okay.
And we need SPARPs.
We do need SPARPs in head-to-head points leagues. On a related note, Bronson Arroyo, who signed that minor league deal with the Nationals, has a history with Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker has a history with old players who aren't very good. And I could see this, depending how spring shapes up, as bumping Tanner Roark from the SPARP conversation.
My heart skipped a beat because I was really afraid you were going to say Joe Ross.
I was afraid for Al's sake that you were going to say Joe Ross.
Oh, I love Joe Ross too. I hope. I didn't even like that. That was so. That seemed so far fetched to me that I wasn't even going to consider the possibility. But yeah, that would be terrible.
Hey, I got a stat for you that I just was able to cobble together while you guys were talking, and I wasn't really listening about Doug Fister. I looked at the Colorado Rockies and the amount of saves they have had in the last three seasons. Now, this is not save chances, so, you know, if you get a better closer, maybe you get more saves, but just amount of team saves that they've had, according to Baseball Reference. 36, 24, and 35 in the last three seasons, actually counting backwards, 2015, 14, 13. Where did that rank in the National League? 12th, last, and 14th out of 15 teams. So they've had, you know, the fourth least or the least amount of saves, or the second least amount of saves, each of the last 3 years. That's all I went back in the National League. Just something to consider. We probably need to dig deeper into that stat, but
that's pretty interesting though. Cause yeah, that's, I mean, even if you assume a lot of saves were blown and with some of the closers they've had, that's not a bad assumption. Even with that, that's not a lot of save chances.
Yeah.
For 3 years running.
All right. Let's talk busts, and we'll start with Heath. He insisted that we talk about Zach Greinke. I was like, we already talked about him on a previous podcast. He said, no, I'm not coming on the show if we don't talk about Zach Greinke. So, Heath, the floor is yours.
It's funny because I think one of my first arguments last year was over Zach Greinke, and I liked him a lot. I didn't expect what he did last year. And I just want to make sure, I think we probably all agree that what Zach Greinke did last year is nowhere close to repeatable. But I'm not sure that everyone else understands that. And when we looked at one of the things I used, and it's very early, but I looked at the Fantasy Pros average draft position, and it showed Greinke going sixth amongst pitchers and 25th overall. And that's just way, way, way too early. He was phenomenal last year. I think one of 19 pitchers ever with an ERA under 1.7 and a WHIP under 0.9. Now, he was the only one of those pitchers to have a FIP over 2.4. It was 2.76 because you just can't maintain a BABIP in the 220s and a home run to fly ball rate in the 7s. I think you guys both have him at 10th amongst starting pitchers. I've actually got him down around 16th or 17th. The thing that really worries about me about him is it's not just like, okay, his ERA is going to go up. He's not going to win 19 games again. He's probably not going to throw 220 innings again because he's only done that once in his whole career besides last year. And chances are the strikeouts going to rebound that much? I don't know. 2 years ago, he was at 7.5 strikeouts per nine. So I think he could be a guy that's a low 3 ERA that's maybe closer to the 20th ranked pitcher than the 10th.
Well, let me read some names that Greinke is ahead of for Scott now. And Heath, you can tell me, you know, like Dallas Keuchel, Chris Archer.
I've got Keuchel ahead of him.
Chris Archer?
I am trying to get to that to tell you for sure, but I believe I have Archer and Greinke back to back.
Gerrit Cole?
I have Cole ahead of him.
Jose Fernandez?
I have Fernandez ahead of him, way ahead of him.
Okay, so some of the differences there, guys, if you want to speak on that.
I really can understand why he's got Greinke ranked lower than Scott or I do, and basically I'm giving him some benefit of the doubt with what he did with that BABIP rate last year, while at the same time not expecting him to be as extreme with it. But there, you know, there was research done. In fact, I think it was done by our newest addition to the baseball team, Jonah Carey,
yes,
about how he was locating on the edges of the strike zone and inducing weak contact. And I'm going to give him some credit for that and assume that even with some regression, you know, regressing down to about the 10th spot, as opposed to being one of the top three pitchers. I was sort of interested in that stat that you came up with, Heath, because you had that XFIP cutoff.
Right.
Or was it FIP? I can't remember.
It was
which.
FIP.
FIP. You know, and I wonder, okay, if we maybe assume, you know, if we lower that a bit.
Right.
If Greinke, you know, could make that with some BABIP regression.
Okay.
Well, what I noticed about what Heath was saying was that he has 16th, 17th,
18th, exactly.
18th.
I just looked, yeah.
Like that seems like you're almost punishing him for last season, because prior to last season we weren't ranking him that low. We weren't ranking him at all.
I was.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I caught a lot of flack for it too. But yeah,
well, maybe
I had...
you should have. Because I mean, I could understand earlier in Greinke's career, like the first few years after Kansas City, when he was bouncing around from Milwaukee and the Angels, there were some ups and downs. But he's really settled in to being this control artist, Cliff Lee type pitcher with the Dodgers. Where, I mean, obviously he took it to another level last year, one that nobody should really expect him to sustain, but Heath was just projecting him for a low threes ERA. The highest ERA in his 3 years with the Dodgers was 2.71. So that's predicting regression beyond what the standard has become for him.
Yeah, if everything else was the same, but I mean, he's... Los Angeles is not some amazing pitcher's park, but he does go to a worse park. I think that would cause a small inflation in what you would expect, maybe only to 2.9. But I also think that, yes, he's done an amazing job of locating, not really, I don't think, on the corners, off the corners, and getting those pitches called and getting batters to swing at. I mean, that's a skill. I'm not sure how long we can expect that to last, though.
All right, guys, let's go to another one of Heath's busts, and Starling Marte, 27 years old, was the number 16 outfielder in points last year. Marte was number 12 in Roto. He had 19 home runs and 30 steals in 40 attempts. He has horrible plate discipline, but he's basically been a very similar player, Heath, for three straight years, hitting between 280 and 291, OBP 337 and 343 in between there. Slugging percentage been between 441 and 453. So, you know, he's been a very consistent player for three straight years. Why is Starling Marte a bust candidate for you?
Well, I think a lot of it's going, and this is one maybe where, because I know Scott wasn't quite as fond as using some of this early average draft position data. And I don't think it's by any means the end all be all, but he was going as the 10th outfielder. And when I look at the outfielders
in,
that are being
in Roto, right?
Yes.
Roto specific.
In Roto.
Because I think Starling Marte might be, you know, one of the five players whose value is there's the biggest gap in value between Roto and head-to-head. But
right. And some of that Roto value was the fact that a lot of his doubles and triples turned into home runs last year. I think Chris Towers is writing a piece this week, maybe today, and it may already be on CBSSports.com about how it's kind of weird how Marte hit the home runs he did with the hard contact rate that he had. He was a guy that I just look at him and see more Lorenzo Cain than I see Chris Davis, George Springer. And I think he's going to be drafted probably at least two rounds before Cain.
Was Cain not a top 10 outfielder last year or close to it?
I think Cain was he?
I think he was pretty close.
Was he?
Yeah. Cain was number 12 in points and number 10 in Roto.
Okay.
Well, so here's who's Marte is going ahead of in Fantasy Pros average draft position. George Springer. I mean, they're basically back to back. JD Martinez, Charlie Blackmon, Nelson Cruz, Yoenis Cespedes, etc. So, and right behind Jose.
And basically right where you stopped, Ryan Braun was the et cetera that you skipped, but if you'd have stopped, after Braun was right about where I would stop saying, okay, that's where he should go.
Okay. So maybe it's just a matter of how much you value steals on draft day.
Yeah, I think, and having, gone through a few self mock drafts, that's one thing I've noticed is, after the elite, after the first four or five rounds, it's very hard to get stolen bases without really tanking in the other categories. If you don't want that one category specialist, you kind of need to secure some steals early. Starling Marte, even if you don't trust the home run total he had last year, he's always been a good source of batting average too. And batting average might be even harder than stolen bases to fill in the late rounds. Yeah. That's one you kind of need to secure in the early rounds. So he meets those two needs. I'm not really disagreeing with Heath in terms of where he ranks among outfielders. I do think guys like Cruz and Blackmon. I mean, Blackmon does all the things Marte does, just, you know, even more stolen bases.
Right.
So I don't understand why Marte would go ahead of them. But at the same time, I do think he's, you know, if he was projected to go in the third round, being the 10th overall outfielder, I might say, well, fourth or fifth is more appropriate.
Right. Okay. And I do have Marte ahead of Blackmon. And just because I think there's similar players, but Marte's got, I think what we saw, last year for me would be his floor. I don't expect him to be worse than that. And I think it could be a lot better. I still think back to the second half of 2014 when he went on a big power binge that was backed up by batted ball data.
Okay. All right. Let's go to one of Scott's busts. Carlos Gonzalez. That's an interesting one. And he had one of the weirdest seasons, was absolutely terrible, looked like he was droppable at one point last year, and then over his last 104 games, he had a 964 OPS, hit 36 home runs after batting 233 with four home runs in his first 49 games. So Carlos Gonzalez, still only 30 years old, Scott, he ended up as the 16th best outfielder in points, 13th best outfielder in Roto, and played the most games of his career, 153. You are calling him an early bust candidate. How come?
Well, why were we calling him a bust candidate last year? Why were we to the point of dropping him in the first half? Because he is a continual injury risk, somebody who is injured more often than not, it seems. Last year, miraculously, wasn't an issue. He played 150 games for the first time ever. But 2014, the injuries got to a point where it was affecting his performance, and I don't think we can just forget about that because he happened to avoid it for one full season. And then on top of that, even with the trade of Corey Dickerson, I think there's a high probability Carlos Gonzalez gets traded out of Colorado this year, just following Troy Tulowitzki out. You know, he's an aging player nearing the end of his long-term deal. We don't expect the Rockies to contend, so some contender will step up and make an offer for him. And in that case, I would expect the same concerns with Dickerson, him leaving that hitter's haven. I think it might even be a bigger problem for Carlos Gonzalez because he's had so much longer in the big leagues to figure out how to hit away from Coors Field and has just made no progress in that area.
All right, so Carlos Gonzalez, he's going maybe around 20th among outfielders, just behind Braun and Kane. Ahead of Adam Jones, Justin Upton, Carlos Gomez. Adam Jones, Justin Upton, Carlos Gomez. Do you guys hear any names among those three that you would take over Carlos Gonzalez? And this is Roto drafting. I'm not sure it matters much because he doesn't steal bases anymore. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I would definitely take Jones over Gonzalez, and I completely agree with that assessment of Gonzalez as a bust because of the way that, not only for the things that Scott mentioned, but the fact that he had that great second half, which will raise expectations for at least some owners.
Man, Adam Jones going so late compared to where he went last year. And he had a down year, I guess, batting .269, but he hit 27 home runs again. He always hits that many or a little bit more home runs. Does that strike you as a guy who's being overlooked, Adam Jones?
His numbers were only marginally down. I think the biggest knock on him was he got hurt for once, because he was one of those players who durability was such a big part of his value. But I agree that people are overreacting to that a little, because there was always the risk of him getting hurt at some point. I don't know why, because it happened the one time, you're going to completely change your assessment of him.
Well, we've talked a lot about outfielders. Let's go to a shortstop. Al says Francisco Lindor, who hit .313 last year with 12 home runs, 12 steals, and 14 attempts in only 99 games, could be a bust this year. Francisco Lindor, Al.
Yeah, well, look, even what he did sort of right out of the gate with the Indians when he got called up was a surprise, because you figure somebody seeing major league pitching for the first time is going to go backwards rather than forwards with their stats. And, you know, we saw better hitting from him right away. But then what he did over the last 6 weeks or so was completely unrelated to anything we had seen from him before. And I just simply don't buy it. I mean, I think it was just a garden variety hot streak where he faced some substandard pitching and maybe a disproportionate share of lefties, who he has always hit very, very well. So I think over the course of a full season that those things are going to even out, and he's going to put up far worse numbers than he did last year. And again, those numbers being very, very skewed by what he did from mid-August forward.
Any thoughts on Lindor from Scott and Heath?
But he's looking at me right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a pretty big divide between Al and I over Lindor. And I don't trust the power to the extent he showed last year necessarily either. But he kind of, the way he came up through the minors, the hype he got relative to the numbers he put up, and then the leap he took as soon as he reached the majors, it kind of reminds me of Jose Reyes. And I think, given the contact skills Lindor showed in the minors and the fact that he's still so young, well, he was 21 last year.
That's big.
Yeah, I don't think we can assume he's anywhere close to being a finished product. So I don't think it would be surprising to see him develop more power in the majors, enough that he's going to be a 20 homer guy like he looked like he could be. No, but for the average I expect him to deliver, and the stolen bases, which weren't even really there last year, he kind of underwhelmed in that regard, but he has more steals potential than he showed. I think even just like a dozen home runs is going to be enough to make him an elite shortstop.
Well, I think that's the key designation, is he plays shortstop. And the shortstop, it's awful. I mean, what I look at the guys,
it's really not anymore.
I don't know. I mean, you have two guys that you really like. And I think it's one of the reasons you don't think it's as awful that I've got quite a ways down the rankings, and that's Addison Russell and Ian Desmond. And you've got both those guys ahead of Lindor. And I guess if you're excited about both of them, then shortstop probably seems quite a bit deeper.
Well, you know, even just above those guys, that there's Correa and Bogaerts, so I'm, you know, I've got them 1-2, and
right,
very excited about,
yeah,
both of them. And then, you know, Tulo, who I'm not excited about, and I think he's going to get drafted way too high. He could be a bust for me. And then Seager, number 4, and Brandon Crawford, who arrived as at least a near elite last year. So Russell and Desmond, arguably very risky, maybe every bit as much so as Lindor. You know, those three are pretty closely bunched together, but you know, even for me, Lindor would be no higher than 6th.
All right, I want to talk about some starting pitchers here, guys. I'm going to throw out a few. So, just jumping around to different people's bust lists. Marcus Stroman is on Heath's, and remember, everybody, these are early bust lists, subject to change. But right now, as of January 29th, Marcus Stroman for Heath, Michael Wacha and Shelby Miller for Al. And should we lump Pineda in with these guys, or is Pineda a little lower on the list?
Lower on my list. Although, well, I've got Shelby Miller.
Yeah, you hate Shelby Miller.
Yeah.
So, I will save Pineda. We'll save Pineda. But Stroman for Heath, and Al says Waka and Shelby Miller. And, you know, for Scott, like, they're all ranked kind of around 30th. So they're similar pitchers. Stroman, Waka, Shelby Miller. And since, Scott, these guys aren't on your bus list, I'll give you the first word. What do you think about these three? Like, do you agree? Do you disagree? What do you think?
Well, I disagree. The one I maybe agree with the most is Shelby Miller. But I don't think expectations are especially high for him, both because mainly because he was 6-17 last year and obviously was a better pitcher than that. Was he such a good pitcher that he deserved what the Diamondbacks gave up for him? No. And so, you know, maybe if people are viewing him as this borderline ace, it kind of just remains to see where he's going in drafts. But I see him as a pitcher who has shown some encouraging signs over his first 2+ years in the majors, or 3+ years. How long has it been? Not very many years. Still very young.
Less than 4.
Yeah. some encouraging signs, has had just as many blips, but there's still reason to think a big breakthrough is in there somewhere just because of the raw stuff, because he has these games where he one hits teams and strikes out double digit batters and just looks really dominant.
This is Shelby Miller you're talking about?
Yes, this is okay. Shelby Miller.
Well, I want to make sure you didn't jump to someone else. Sorry. Continue
so,
your thoughts.
I mean, he's the one who I think you'd be the most likely to overpay for of these three.
It's funny because on the early average draft position, he's by far below Waka and Stroman.
Yeah. Well, when I say right, as he deserves to be.
Miller had kind of a rough second half. His last 18 starts, he had a 4 ERA. I mean, he was 1-14. Can't really blame him for that, but
well, he was pretty bad on the road last year too, wasn't he?
It's
367 on the road.
And I'm it's hard to bite it all off in a quick 2-minute spiel, but.
Well, let me tell you which one I don't agree with.
Okay, go ahead.
I think Marcus Stroman is an emerging stud, and I know he had a 354 FIP and a 237 BABIP, and if you're not familiar with Heath, he's just as nerdy as Alan Criss. So I know that's probably why you're dissing Stroman. That's probably why you're dissing Stroman, but I think Stroman is, you know, the strikeouts are weird. I don't know why he doesn't strike more batters out, I guess, but,
Well, that's kind of a big thing, though. Like,
yeah, not, but
he did strike out a ton of batters in the minor leagues,
right?
And he just really hasn't in the majors. And I'm going to be honest; it doesn't have anything to do with the 354 FIP or the 237 BABIP, because that's in 27 innings. I don't.
Oh,
think
yeah, right. True.
I don't think that's really even that relevant. But yeah, 157 innings with 7.4 strikeouts per 9 is a little bit more concerning. And really, for me. And I'm not, you said I was as big a nerd as these guys. I'm not as good at keeping up with the prospects or minor league performance as they are.
You're a nerd.
And so when I saw Stroman pitch, specifically last year in the playoffs, and I just didn't see it. Like I don't see a top 30 starting pitcher, which is where he's being drafted, especially if he strikes out 7.5 batters per 9 and has to pitch in the Rogers Center half the time.
Interesting, because I do see that type of talent. I think he's electric.
Yeah, I guess, well, okay, he made one start against Kansas City and gave up 11 hits in 6 1/3 innings. Is that what you saw?
He also wasn't great in his earlier start in the postseason.
He was fine. 3.46 ERA. The two starts he made in the ALDS, 3.46 ERA, 1.08 WHIP.
I mean, what, are we not going to draft Kershaw because Kershaw wasn't good in the postseason?
Well,
we've got a little bit larger sample size of regular season performance with Clayton Kershaw.
That postseason they shouldn't have made him there. They made him like the ace in the postseason, right? For whatever reason. Like, didn't they pitch him ahead of David Price?
Yeah, because they believe in postseason stuff. Well, that's why, I think.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. And Price is bad in the postseason. Price is bad in the postseason, exactly. Like, it just doesn't really matter to me.
I agree with you 100%. It does not matter to me how Clayton Kershaw and David Price pitch in the postseason. What Marcus Stroman did in the postseason last year is just about the same sample size as what he did in the regular season, and it's a fairly decent proportion of the sample size of his career so far.
What about his rookie season? This was a guy last year before he tore the ligament in his knee. He was a very trendy breakout pick.
I understand. And now that breakout's being priced into, you say, what about his rookie season? If you're telling me he's going to have a 3.5 ERA and strike out 7.5 batters per nine over 180 innings, it's not a top 30 pitcher.
Yeah, but he had a 117 whip. He had a 117 whip. He had a 284 FIP that season. He only gave up 7 home runs in 130 and two thirds. I think he pitched better than a 365 ERA.
Oh, according to his FIP and his ex-FIP, he certainly did. You nerd.
Yeah. I think it was one of those cases where the final, you know, as his rookie season went on, a Taijuan Walker last year situation where he got better.
Right.
But you have Jordan Zimmerman 30th. Like, right. I want big strikeout pitchers too, but you run out of those at some point. And if you're willing to go Zimmerman that early, I don't know why you want to be willing to go Stroman at least close to as early.
Maybe close to as early. He's being drafted quite a bit higher than Zimmerman is right now.
Is he?
He's going
None
in the...
None of us have him ranked ahead of Zimmerman.
He's going in the 7th round.
Where's Zimmerman going?
In the 9th.
That is true in our mocks.
Yes.
You know, early March, we're having the same conversation, then I hear you.
Yeah, I've been... Sorry, Al. I've been using the Fantasy Pros ADP just because I'll use our mock draft ADP a little bit later on, and not just mock draft, but a little bit later on when we have more data to go by. But.
Right, right. And then and again, this, I could, I guess, predict the busts based on where I think that people are going to draft. I just, and this isn't completely accurate, but I think it's probably more accurate than my guesses as to where they'll be drafted.
All right, fellas, we got about 10 minutes left. Here's what I'm going to do. We're getting a lot of emails lately, so next week we'll definitely do a mailbag show. I'm going to take the emails that I had in today's show. I'm going to put them in the mailbag show, among others. Remember, the fewer the keeper questions, the better. Also, a few of you emailed with your bust candidates. I know Reggie did. I know Mike did. Ben, I think you gave us some busts. So I will save those for next week's mailbag show, and we'll start podcasting more frequently. Since we have about 10 minutes left, let's look at more of your lists here. And how about an Al Melchior bust of Dexter Fowler? You are thinking Dexter Fowler could be a bust this year. Okay, go for it, Al. Floor is yours.
All right. Well, you know, first of all, his ADP is very low right now. So that might just be because of his free agent status. I'd be really interested to see what happens, when he signs with the White Sox or whoever.
Right.
So, you know, that's one that I might have to revisit. But in terms of just, you know, what he brings, I'm just afraid that what he did with the Cubs last season is going to raise his expectation levels to far above what they actually are right now, because he's somebody whose health I don't trust. So it's kind of a reverse Adam Jones situation here, where most seasons, rather than not, Fowler's not been dependable to get steady plate appearances. And I don't trust the power numbers that he had last year either. And he didn't have the fly ball distances to back those up. So I see him just reverting back to who he was with the Rockies and the Astros, which is somebody who goes in the DL pretty frequently and doesn't really help you a whole lot other than in points leagues with the walks and doubles and triples.
Yeah. Fowler spent almost the entire season batting leadoff. He scored 102 runs. And that probably, you know, significantly helped his fantasy value. So that's could be taken into account as well. Scott, you have Adam Eaton on your potential bust list.
Yep.
How come?
Because I don't think he's very good.
Wow.
I mean, it was such a backloaded season, and it was mostly batting average. And you look at his BABIP in the second half, I think it was over 400. It was ridiculous. So it was obviously an unsustainable pace he was on there, and not that he was bad, not that I think he's as bad as he was in the first half when he hit 245 with the 692 OPS. It's just you have to factor in the normalization on both ends of the spectrum, and I think that makes him sort of a lesser version than a completely healthy Dexter Fowler.
Heath cannot wait.
I'm guessing he's going to be drafted before then.
Heath can't wait to jump in here on Adam Eaton.
Well, I know, because I'm usually the guy making the BABIP argument, and I agree with it to a certain extent, except in 2014, he had a 360 BABIP. So he's done it 2 years in a row. He's probably going to be a high BABIP guy, I would think.
He had a 360 BABIP for the full season?
359.
That's very high.
Yeah, see, that's not 360.
I mean,
that seems so high, though.
Oh, it's ridiculously high. I agree.
So what did his full BABIP end up being last season?
345. For his career, it's now 338.
No, that's still...
I'll buy the 348. There are very, very few players who can sustain a 350 or 360, but Eaton's the sort of hitter who could probably, over the long haul, be in the 330, 340 range. And I totally buy into the power surge of the second half. So I don't discount it because it's back. I'm making an argument for Eaton. He's on my bust list too, but yeah. I'm the high man of the three of us on Eaton because I have him ranked a few spots ahead of both Heath and Scott, and I have him with the highest value. I'm looking at $10, but I think this is that's a head-to-head value. But roto value is probably not that different for him.
Geez, so where are you guys going to consider drafting Eaton in our five outfielder roto draft today, or are you just going to let someone else do it?
I mean, look, we've all got him in our top 40. So, you know, I mean, when Scott said he's not that good, I mean, it's all relative. I mean, we all think he's a top 40 outfielder, but he was a top 20 outfielder last season and a top 10 outfielder in the second half. None of us think he's going to be anything close to that because just as good of a hitter as he may be on balls in play, he's not going to be what he was in the second half, which I think was around 400.
Well, that will be, I mean, this is a really good test of, is the public going to draft him based on what he did last year? Because I don't, like, if I was going to project where he's going to be drafted, I'd guess he's going to be drafted around the 30th or 35th outfielder. If people are drafting him like what he did last year, then yeah, he's the biggest bust.
And I think the Fantasy Pros ADP does have him where we all want to have him, which means we may all have to rethink this, but I was pretty confident that, people would draft him top 20, top 25 among outfielders, you know, because he finished in the top 20.
Right.
And even if you detract from that a little bit and you look at what he did in the second half, you're like, okay, I'll buy the second half. But do I buy that he's the 20th or 25th best outfielder? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
I could see people drafting him over Corey Dickerson.
Oh, that would be insane.
I could see that. I mean,
yeah, I could see it too. Like Al was saying, I could see people just looking where he finished last year and drafting him accordingly. And I think that's giving him maybe a little too much credit in some areas and maybe not giving other players with higher upside enough credit. Like a Gregory Polanco. I still think Polanco has a higher ceiling than Eaton. Last year may be Eaton's ceiling.
So let's go one more. Lorenzo Cain, a slap in the face to Heath Cummings and Royals fans everywhere. This guy is on Scott's bus list, 12th best outfielder in points, 10th best in roto last year. Cain will be 30 years old in April, and he batted .307. He stole 28 bases for the second straight season. He hit 16 home runs. And Scott, what are you not digging about Lorenzo
Cain? Another guy that just maintains a stupid high career BABIP.
And that's fine. I'll give him the batting average. I'll give him the 20 steals or so. He's done that 2 years in a row now. It's the home runs where I think this house of cards could just collapse. Because it's like right now, this last year was this perfect scenario where Cain wasn't really a standout in any one area, but he was just good enough across the board to be an elite player. The home runs, we hadn't really seen him do anything close to that since he was in the minor leagues, which was a long time ago. And he's 29 years old. That's pretty late for a power breakthrough.
Maybe
it's legit.
Right.
But from the perspective of, okay, a bust is somebody who, if I drafted a certain spot, there's a risk factor for this guy that could make him come not anywhere close to meeting that value. And I think Kane's a perfect example of that just because that power is such an outlier over his career.
Now, I really don't think there's any chance that he's going to be drafted to the top 12 outfielder this year. I think he's probably going to be drafted somewhere around 18 or 20.
But I'm saying if he doesn't hit those home runs, he's going to be a bust even at 18 or 20.
Well, he only hit 16, so it's not like it was a huge part of his value, but he did hit 5.
16 is... just look at where he ranked 2 years ago versus where he ranked last year, because all the other numbers were the same. It was a big difference.
Well, there was something going on, and look, I'm not really disagreeing with Scott because it remains an outlier and kind of a late bloomer syndrome that makes me a little bit suspicious, but something was going on last year because this hard contact rate on Fangraphs went up more than 10 percentage points, which is a huge swing. And his average fly ball distance in 2014 was 261 feet. Last year, stay seated, brace yourselves, 282, which is also an enormous swing.
And he did increase his walk percentage. He dropped his strikeout percentage by 5%.
Which is pretty big.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But these are kind of just different ways of saying the same thing. A guy hits more home runs. He probably made harder contact. He probably hit balls farther. You look at Eric Hosmer's average fly ball distance over the years. It's up, down, up, down, up, down, along with his performance. So I don't know that necessarily proves or disproves anything. It's just extra information that's worth knowing.
Okay, Lorenzo Cain or Charlie Blackmon?
Cain.
Ooh, I think I have Blackmon higher.
I definitely go Blackmon. If he were to some reason be traded, that may change.
Lorenzo Cain or another...
And I said Cain, and that was a totally gut thing. I actually do have Blackmon a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Okay, Lorenzo Cain or Carlos Gonzalez, also on Scott's bust list.
To be fair, in points league, Scott is the highest ranker on Lorenzo Cain.
Is that true? It's pretty much ranked the same in both formats.
Well, by one slot.
I just think it's funny that I was arguing against him being a bust, and Scott has him as a bust. I'm sorry, Lorenzo Cain or who?
Carlos Gonzalez.
I got Cain one spot ahead.
I've got Cain two spots ahead.
I don't know where I have
you have Cain. Gonzalez one spot ahead.
Okay, so Gonzalez.
But both on your bust list.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. This was fun. Heath, how did it feel to be back?
This was amazing. It was really the highlight of the month of January.
Who's on a bigger high right now? You being back on the podcast?
Yes.
Or Adam getting engaged?
No comment.
I
had like four different things so quickly come into my head. I wish you could have seen the thought train. Every single one of like, nope, can't say that. Nope, can't say that. Nope. So I'm just not going to say anything.
He just shuts down.
It's pretty exciting though. I'm not going to lie. I'm enjoying this. Although I'm getting like a million text messages, which is a bit annoying, but I'm excited.
You have friends, Adam. It's a good thing.
Well, you don't know if they're really friends. This is the people who never text me.
When you get engaged, like it's not an obligation.
They just want an invite to the wedding. You know how it is.
Oh, that reminds me. I have to
like
send
going
you a text.
To weddings? I thought that was like an obligatory thing you did.
Oh, I don't know. Do you guys like going to? If you got a wedding invitation, how would you feel about it?
Ugh.
I guess it's nice to be invited.
Right. You don't have to go.
I would hope they lived far away, so it was easy for me to say no.
That is true, yeah.
No, because then you still got to send a present.
You do not have to send a present if you don't go to the wedding.
What's that?
Well, if you get invited to a wedding, it's appropriate to send a present.
Yeah, I got invited to one of my buddy's weddings that I wasn't going back for, and I responded with not only no, but I'm also not sending a present.
And that's one of your buddies?
Yeah.
What a lame buddy you are.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, if it were a friend of mine, of course I would get him a gift.
No chance.
But if it was just like a fringe person, you know, I don't think it'd be that big of a deal. I suppose I'd get a gift. I'd get something from the registry. Al, you want to weigh in?
I just sent you a text.
Oh, damn you, Al. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back sometime next week. We're going to try for the Tuesday-Thursday schedule for the time being. But, you know, it's fluid. So thank you guys for coming on and everybody for listening. Have a great weekend. I've said that twice now. You can tell how distracted I am by all the text messages coming through. See you later.